morning, everybody, and welcome to Game Changers on 101.5 UMFM.
That's on the radio.
And we talk about video games on this show.
What?
I'm Megan.
And I'm Alice.
We collect video games, we play video games, we praise and complain about video games.
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
And we are getting to the holiday season where new games are coming out.
Sort of.
In time for the holiday season, at least.
Well, kind of, but I don't know. Here's the thing, because I feel that there are certain games, like, for example, Cyberpunk 2077, is that the number it is?
Yeah, because it used to be 2020, and then they had to move it up 57 years.
What?
Well, yeah, the original tabletop RPG used to be 2020.
I see, okay. Well, I guess so, but in this case, I'm talking about the video game, right?
Right.
Okay.
So it's been delayed a few times now.
Yeah, it's been delayed till the middle or beginning of December now, but it should honestly be delayed for longer, because there already is, reports of, like, tremendous crunch. What is it? This CD Projekt Red or whatever, the who is developing these games, as well as The Witcher, who, you know, everybody loves The Witcher, or something. Which, it's fine. It's a game. That's a video game. But they have bragged to the effect that their crunch is, like, they crunch harder than other people. Like, they make fun of other companies who crunch really hard, or something. Which is gross.
That's not cool.
Yeah, well, it's just really, like, I'm like, all right, this is weird thing to brag about, right? Weird thing to be proud of.
We're so proud of our human rights violations.
Yeah, so it's just sort of like, once again, where our priorities are at, like, you could wait another 3 years or 4 years or 10 years for Cyberpunk 77. Like, once again, I waited for, what is it? The Last Guardian, which was a game that probably was maybe not going to come out. And I was, like, fine with it. And I was fine if it was never going to come out. I'll be sad. But at the same time, you know, I rather waited. That's, like, different than development, but at the same time.
It took years for that game to be released.
Yeah.
And
anyway.
So, there are games to look out for. I did play the demo for Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. And you can get the demo right now on the Switch. It is a rather hefty demo that gives you some tutorial and a couple of missions for the beginning. And it can take you about 2 hours to get through this. Mm-hmm. It is fun. I am going to be picking up this game when it does come out. You get to play as Link, Impa, and Zelda. So you get a taste of what the story is going to be, and it is exactly what I want in a melee game. It gives me a lot of very solid moves to play with, and there's different moves between the three characters, and I know there's going to be more to play with.
And I just assume it's one of those games, like, I know, what was it, the original Hyrule Warriors had DLC characters, I believe, as well, so there's also, things like that. There's the fact that, you know, characters from Hyrule Warriors could show up, because they had Zant in there for some reason, right? He was just there.
Who, if you're not aware of Zant, was from Twilight Princess as a villain.
Yeah, which he doesn't really make sense showing up within the Hyrule Warriors world sort of thing. Like, there are certain characters that are just there and they're just like, we're going to have them because they're cool. So I sort of hope that they do that as well and they ignore the canon. Like, they just decide that this is non-canon, we're just here to have fun sort of thing.
Yeah.
I feel that it is story heavy, right? Like, this is a prequel, basically.
This is a prequel, but I think I can't spoil it because we don't really know what the story is, but it seems like there is this little, one of the guardians, one of the big things that shoots lasers at you, there's a little miniature one who's going to be the mascot, has traveled back in time somehow to try and save Zelda. And we don't really know where that's going to lead to.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So it has to do, it is technically a sequel prequel, a little in a way. Like, it's almost like a sequel. It's right after Breath of the Wild, but it's also 100 years before.
I think it might be within that 100-year span where there's something going on with Castle Hyrule where this little critter has woken up and is under attack and needs to go and rescue Zelda, but it knows that Zelda is somewhere in the past.
Okay, so...
It's sort of a... It might be like a midquel. A weird sort of...
That's interesting. I don't know how much I like that. I think they should just... deal with what they got. We already have stuff that's in the past, right? We already have a past game. We don't really need to be, like, revisiting a reason why to have a past game, right?
Yeah.
We're interested enough in, like, what happened 100 years ago, right?
I think this little guy's gonna be, like, the Navi of this game, and they need some way of making a sort of Navi fairy situation.
They don't. There's not one in Breath of the Wild.
No, there's not one in Breath of the Wild, but this is a Hyrule Warriors game.
I see. Like, they need a... I think they could have done with a... This feels like... This feels a weird addition.
It's very cute. I love this little guy.
Yeah, but it feels like either a money-making thing or, like that's what it feels like.
Okay.
Like, well, that's what it feels... why? Because there is also, like, 10 million other Legend of Zelda mascots we could just pigeonhole in here. To be honest.
This one doesn't talk.
I know, but it's it could be any... Like, there are non-talking ones. I'm just saying, there are a lot of Zelda characters that could be usable as your, like, little guy that tells you what to do.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting that they do that.
So, we'll see. I'm going to pick up the game when it does come out. It comes out November. November 20th, not December 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway... So, I will be checking that out. And you can play Zelda, which is cool. And Zelda's got some pretty good moves.
Okay.
So, she can use her tablet to attack people using the powers you get in Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
It's fun. In the meantime, I am getting through Ghost of Tsushima's multiplayer. And I'm having a lot of fun with that one. I'm actually pretty surprised by this, too. Because I'm not normally a multiplayer kind of person. So this is where you get to pick out of four classes. You can be a Ronin, a Hunter, you can be a Samurai, and you can be an Assassin. Oh, yeah. And right now I'm playing as the Assassin because I like the stealth of this game.
Mm-hmm.
You get set out in different missions, and you can play with up to four other people. So far I've only played with one person, and if you don't want to do multiplayer... You can play by yourself to complete these missions. It's just like in the regular Ghost of Tsushima, where you can go to different settlements and fight undead Mongols and demons.
Oh, what?
The Mongolian warriors that you're fighting in the regular game.
Mm-hmm. No, but why are they undead?
It hasn't fully explained, other than the evil that was brought with them has permeated the land, and I guess you got to go and take care of that problem.
What?
It feels very much... more of a fantasy setting this time around, where you're...
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem within the realm of realism that Ghost of Tsushima is, which, like, it feels kind of okay, because I feel Sucker Punch does this, where they have, like, DLC that's just around... But maybe they don't do that. I feel maybe it's Far Cry I'm thinking about, where it's just, like Blood Dragon was just,
yeah,
like,
that's Far Cry.
A completely different game, right? And but it's with the same assets kind of thing. And that's almost like, is that what this is, almost?
Yeah, it is.
It's like a completely different game, just with the same assets, almost.
Yeah, yeah, but the best thing is if you already have Ghost of Tsushima, you don't have to pay extra for this. They gave this to you, so... Oh. And it gives you a level-up system. You get better items, you get better attacks as you go along through the chapters, because you can play this game as chapters, or you can do it as a survival mode where you try and last as long as you possibly can. And... it's a pretty solid little setup. Like, these missions can take quite a while. You get better rewards if you go through the bronze, silver, or gold ranks. Mm. I'm a weenie. I'm playing on bronze, so I'm not getting a whole lot in the way of the higher grade rewards yet. But I'm having a lot of fun. You can play with your friends if they have Ghost of Tsushima as well. It's definitely worth checking out.
Well, it's nice that it's free, right? It's not like... DLC or something. Well, it's free DLC, I guess.
Yeah. You still have to go and download it like you would with DLC, but they don't charge
free
you for it.
DLC?
Yeah.
What?
I believe the catch is you do have to have PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, well, but, for online capability. Yeah. I would assume if you just wanted to do the single player campaign or whatever it is, that you would be able to do it yourself. Which is, that's nice, right? Once again.
And they've given me New Game Plus as well, so if I want to go back and play it with more of a challenge, I may actually go and check that one out, because apparently I had a fourth horse option that I missed out on, that I got to go back and pick out my fourth colored horse.
Oh, neat.
Really, that's the most important thing of this game.
Horses are fine in that game. They're okay.
And I keep getting updates to my game, so I am back on Pokemon again, because the Crown Tundra DLC came out. And I'm having a lot of fun with that as well, exploring a whole new area and catching those legendaries that keep getting teased at me.
Yeah, which ones? Like the fancy, the weird, scary rabbit or the birds?
Both. I'm going to go after both.
There's like a, what, Galarian? Is this where we are? Galar region? So yeah, there's the Galarian version of Zapdos, Moltres, and Articuno.
Right.
And they look really neat. I like the alternate versions. I think that was a really smart idea. Like, to be honest, people have been doing that for literal years. Like, fans have been drawing Pokemon, like, different variants, right? So, it was, you know, Nintendo really, you know, they could have gone on that earlier. People would have been into it then, honestly. We're into it now, for the most part.
Those aren't the only legendaries you can catch. They have different spots in this DLC where you can go and do the Dynamaxing challenges to get other legendaries, and that's how I got Suicune, the legendary dog.
Just a bunch of random.
You have
legendaries?
To go through. I don't know how random they are. I've only got Suicune so far.
Okay, is it a map like you find them?
You have to go through a gauntlet of using rental Pokemon. Actually, that's kind of the catch in this one. You can't take your own.
You have to make do with what you got.
Yeah.
And is it, you don't know if it's random?
I don't know if it's random. So far,
I'm just wondering, like, how does it decide which one you get? Because obviously there are more than Suicune. And I would assume if they have Suicune, they have, you know, the rest of the legendary dogs. They probably have those rock guys, right? The reggae guys.
I think there's actually temples you can go into for that one. Because they got reference to them. So
makes sense. Like, there's probably a lot more. And they want to do this so you can be able to get the legendary Pokemon, right? And not have to, I don't know. How would you get them? Certain ones you could do in the Let's Go series, I'm sure, like Eevee, Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go. But I don't know. I guess if you had them from Pokemon, because they have Pokemon Home now, is that what that is?
And I was playing on Pokemon Home. I transferred all my Pokemon from Sun and Moon, and I still can't get a huge chunk from Home onto my Sword and Shield.
Aren't some of your Pokemon glitch Pokemon, Megan?
That is besides the point.
I was like, hey.
But those aren't the ones.
Oh, interesting.
The ones that I want are actually legit ones that I've caught. Like,
are they just too old?
No, they just aren't available yet in data-wise.
That's fine.
Back to the conversation we had when it initially came out.
About that there isn't literally 800 models of every Pokemon. Why aren't there 800 different models? Did you want the people who work on Pokemon to die?
However, because we do know there is a Gold and Silver Let's Go Pokemon coming out, that means a huge chunk of the ones that I can't bring in yet will eventually be available.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, I will... My shiny Ampharos will eventually be able to follow me.
Yeah, well, because that makes sense with the legendary dogs, because probably, what's coming next is, Gold and Silver, so Lugia and Ho-Oh, right?
Right.
That's cool. I get it. They're going to come out with that. It's fine. Like, that one I might play, because Gold and Silver was my favorite one.
Same.
We'll see. I'm not going to make promises that I'm going to play a Pokemon game, because I'm not 100% invested, especially if I don't have my personal Pokemon team one day.
Well, we have our own accounts. I'm sure we could figure it out. So that is what I've been playing, and I'll come back to you with more Pokemon because this is going to consume my life for the next week or so.
Okay.
And you have been playing a lot more video games as well with your spiffin' new setup.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've been playing.
So I played and beat Smile for Me. That's what it's called. I was like, Smile for Us? No, it's Smile for Me.
Only for me.
Only for... And so basically, like, I had seen someone play this, and I thought it was just such a fascinating little game. It's a 3D game, but all of the characters are, like, 2D JPEG sort of thing, and they're all very stylized. It's quite cute. You are given sort of a variety of items that you can choose. Like, there's a hand, there's a boxing glove, there is camera. I'm trying to think of what else. But the main thing of this game is that you have come to this place called the Habitat because you are, like, I would assume that because you're unhappy. Like, you, people, you know, basically this is like a place where people go if they're depressed, basically, is sort of how they've set this up. And there's Dr. Habitat, who wants to help these people become happy somehow. And you are also there. You are a flower delivery person or child. They call you the flower child or flower kid. And you sort of take it upon yourself to try and help the people out in this place. Like, try to cheer them up, try to make them happy so that they can leave this facility. Because, you know, it's not supposed to be a permanent place. It's just supposed to be a place where they go while they get better, right, sort of thing. Like
a recovery place.
Yeah, it's interesting, except it's like, it's bizarre. It's like, you're starting in a floor where there's a bunch of rooms. It's like a main sort of like, I guess, a little bit of like an apartment situation. There's a rooftop with not a pool. And then there's an open area with like a weird, very weird little carnival that you have to access. But it's just sort of like, it's kind of a puzzle-solving, point-and-click kind of situation. Like, you have to do things to make people happy. It's very cute. Like,
it reminds me very much of the fetch quests that you'll find in games.
Yeah, it is. It is, like, basically, you are asked to do, like, for example, there's this little girl who wants to... She wants, like, an outfit for, like, fighting crime or something. And you find her this, like, old wrestling, like, hat that you smudge red paint on it because green, she doesn't like the color green. She likes the color red.
Right.
And then you also have to find, like, you cut out a piece of fabric off of a tent to make her a little cape. And then she will give you her punching glove, which is, you need the punching glove for multiple quest items, which is kind of funny. Yeah. Like, that's sort of the gist of, like, what the quests are. They are a little bizarre. They're kind of funny. Like, the writing is very clever. It's very funny. It's kind of, like, I don't want to say it's, topical, but it's, like, it's within the present day. Like, it's sort of the lingo we use today. And sort of, it's very good. Like, it's funny. It's cute. Like, there's one character who is a vampire, right? And there's another character who wants to prove to the world that this, or prove to himself at least, that this guy's a vampire, right? So
right.
To do things like use a megaphone to while the vampire talks about being a vampire, sort of thing. And it's all very nonchalant, right? It's just, it's very cute. Visually, a great game. It's like surprisingly deeper. One of the really cool things is that they have these live action puppet segments in between.
Right.
Yeah. And they're very cool, and that's by, there's a puppet of the well, I'll say main antagonist, who is the Dr. Habitat. The basic thing is that, you know, people aren't really getting happy here, and the doctor, every time you do something to benefit people, he gets mad, right? He gets mad that people are going to leave his facility, right? And
right.
So he won't be happy. So I won't spoil it, because I think it's genuinely a very good game. It's just, it's kind of a little bizarre, it's cute, like, visually, there's a lot of fun. It's just kind of a nice game, you know? Like, I think there are endings where you can there is a bad, quote-unquote bad ending and quote-unquote good ending, right? But, yeah.
So, we've been playing a lot of good games lately that have live-action puppet scenes.
Yeah.
Is this gonna be, like, a rule now?
Well, I think it's kind of neat. I wonder if people decided or people, like, really realized that, like, live-action puppets can be used really effectively or in, like, a creepy way. Like, I think both what you're talking about, Control as well, yeah. And the Smell for Me, which I think they're both used in, like, a creepy way.
Right.
They're used to sort of intimidate or... which... yeah, I think works really well. I want to say, like, there was that those animated short, or not animated, but live action puppet, like, Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Like,
right.
I want to hazard to say that that's that popularity or that, like, the ability to show that, yep, this can be creepy and people are like, oh my God, that's brilliant, you know?
Because puppets, if they're not executed properly, can be so uncanny. Like,
yeah, and so I think, yeah, I think that's utilized really well. And, they, you know, the little parts are basically, they're not every time. I think it depends on, like, how many people you make happy that you get a little message. Otherwise, when you go to sleep, you get, like, scary messages. Or well, they're kind of, like, kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really like this game. I definitely recommend it.
On the PC?
Yeah, it's on the PC. I think that's... It is also available for Mac, though. Like, you can get it for both, so...
And yeah. That wasn't the only game that you played this week.
Yes. I also played and beat The Beginner's Guide, which is, like... I don't know, is it just... Is it... It's the follow-up game to... The guy who did the Stanley Parable?
Right.
Yeah. So, and if you played the Stanley Parable, that's very, like, a very, I don't know, it's tongue-in-cheeky, but it's also, like, very existential.
Which, they've been doing updates on the Stanley Parable, have they not?
I think they have, and there was actually, like, a pretty large one. I would like to check it out, because I will get that achievement that I haven't played it in, like, 7 years or something, which I'm excited to get. But this is called The Beginner's Guide. And it's very interesting because it sets itself up as you are someone who is being narrated by this guy who knew the person who created these video games.
Right.
And you're going through all these sort of little test games, like little works in progress that this person, whose name is Coda, that Coda made. So Coda, which is like, for the, like, in music terms, it's like an ending or, like, coming to an end, which is a very interesting and I think very appropriate name. It's also neat because it's called The Beginner's Guide, because beginning, ending. Anyway, and so you're basically someone who is being narrated by this person who is trying to sort of figure out where Coda went. Like, Coda is gone. He can't contact Coda anymore. Coda was somebody who, like, heavily inspired our narrator into creating game development, and he was someone who he really liked Coda's games and thought they were really neat. But what sort of begins to happen is it's sort of like, is it really what this person, like, or is it really what Coda was, or is it just what this person thinks Coda was, right?
Right.
Or, and what he's, this person, the narrator, is trying to force on or force us to believe about Coda through, like, viewing these different games. Because they're all sort of, like, weird. A lot of them are just sort of, like, box rooms where you go from one place to other. It is really neat because there's a variety. And there is sort of a very theme about sort of, like, loneliness in game development or just game development in general and sort of, like, the pitfalls. Or even you could apply it to creativity in general and just sort of, like, losing creativity or losing, like, or becoming depressed about, you know, doing the thing that you love and not being able to do it or not being able to, you know, get accolades or whatever for it, kind of thing, or validation. Mostly social validation. I think that's what that this game sort of more focuses on. And, like, I won't spoil it, but it is a really very interesting ending. I had actually watched somebody play it a long time ago and I forgot the ending, so it was nice when I watched it again. I was like, oh dang, because there's a lot of really interesting, like, almost very cutting things about this game, and it's interesting. I don't know if it's, like, as fun as the Stanley Parable, because I think there's a lot of fun to be had with that game.
That's because the Stanley Parable has a lot of humor in it.
Yes, this isn't a very funny game. This is like kind of existential. It's sort of about
more of a philosophical journey.
Yeah, a little bit. It's just sort of about like what validation we will seek and how we will do it and how we will get it and sort of at what cost and what happens when we get that sort of thing. So I liked it a lot. There's almost a part of me that wishes there is more to it. Like, if I could find more, I don't know, episodes or more bits or whatever. But maybe they'll update it as well. One of the things isn't neat because I think there was almost controversy surrounding this game that somebody else made these games. You know, and that you know, he was showing them off. Like, because it's in terms of a game where you are somebody who is being shown these unfinished works by somebody else, right?
Right.
Within the narration. But obviously it's done by...
So taking away the ownership of the original creator.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to it, right? There's
right.
a lot of interesting things in it. And it's neat. I do recommend it, especially if you like the Stanley Parable. It is like, I would say, in walking simulator, like that sort of genre, right?
Right.
But I like those. Those are, I don't know, my cup of tea. And then, yeah, the other game I was playing, I started playing with people, is Raft.
So tell me about Raft, because I was in the area. Yeah.
Raft is a game, so what I'm getting is that it's somehow, the world, all of the ice caps flooded the world, and the world is mostly covered in water.
Right.
So it is a post-apocalyptic situation. And it's just sort of like it's sort of like, it's like Minecraft in a way, right? Like where it's you scavenge for supplies, you build up your raft, you sort of float around, you learn new things to research new crafts, and you continue on. The main thing with this game is that there are actual like story locations to an extent.
Right.
Like there are islands that you can find, and there will be things like notes that tell you, you know, like what happened or who was on this island and what they were doing, what was the state of things, because most places you are they're abandoned. There's a shark around that's pretty consistent around your raft, boat, whatever. There are other like things like this was also recently updated. I have not played the previous version, but I played the newer one, so this has a lot more, I think, mobs, including like there's a boar, there's a bird, which really terrified me because I was sort of excited to see it because I was like, oh, pretty, and then I noticed it was like picking up a rock, and then I noticed it was going to drop that rock on my head.
It was pretty funny because like, oh man, guys, there's this cool bird right here.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's got a rock. Yeah. Run away.
Yeah. And for things like that, you're given like rudimentary weapons, like, you know, you have a spear. I finally made a bow, which would be able to kill a bird. And there's things like pufferfish. They've added a bunch of little things. The one thing that I really enjoy about this game is like, there's a lot of really good world building, and it's just sort of neat. Like the place that we floated to was called Caravan Town, and it's just a bunch of old, like, caravans, like had a camper sort of things, yeah, and it's just like they're all sort of stacked in sort of a town like city area. There's actually like a little area where it's like a market where there's like canned goods, fresh water, like where it's obviously no one's there anymore, but it just sort of indicates like this was the life that people had, you know, this is sort of what happened. And then, once again, there are little notes everywhere that sort of explain. There was, like, a mayor's area, right? Like, it's nice world building, right?
So, it's sort of like Waterworld met Wind Waker.
Yeah, because, yeah. I would
the movie Waterworld.
Yeah. Like, you're not wrong, because it is an amount of, like, there's sort of, like, we're discovering ancient civilizations. Like, the most recent one we come across is, like, a huge glass dome, and it's, like, very futuristic. It's very cool. It's kind of exciting, like... Stuff like that is really neat, because it is sort of like you're discovering it, because it's stuff like you'll be sitting on your raft and you sort of see in the very, very distance like something big, right? And you're like,
right.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. So it's nice. And for me, I love discovery games. I like games where I can explore and be rewarded for my exploration, which this does quite a bit, which, yeah. I like it. I want to play more.
So also on the PC.
Saw the PC, yeah. I think it's on like Steam and Itch. It's like they're continually developing it, which, once again, always love that.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week. We've been busy playing games, and we'll be busy all week playing more video games. Yeah. Everybody, keep changing.
Bye.